We've got lots to get to on our program this afternoon. You know, Ryan, I think we're actually doing a pretty good job of keeping the energy high, finding ways to actually get content on the program and still having a little bit too much fun and talking about inane and ridiculous things. I think we found the balance, my friend, as we are approaching 2 weeks of doing this show with absolutely nothing to talk about in the sporting world.
Lot of feedback on the pigeon segment, Pat. A lot of positive feedback. A lot of, I think, sympathy. A lot of shared pain in the battle against the pigeons on downtown balconies. Good to hear that. Really good to hear that.
We've got lots to get to this segment, but I can't think of a better way to start it off. A Pinder family member can empathize with your work partner, hey?
I honestly think we're in day 15 of the sports apocalypse. I want to bring my sister on. She's got a pigeon story that would dwarf yours, and maybe I'll send her a note. Maybe she can come on after we chat with Lou at 2:45. Maybe we get another downtown Calgary pigeon assault in the Beltline.
I'm all for it. Welcome to Pinder and Steinberg. I certainly am all for that. How are you feeling? You're a baseball guy. You spent, 2.5 minutes at spring training this year? Did not end up being a long trip to Southwest Florida, but you did get to spring training for a third consecutive year. Today was supposed to be opening day in the majors. A little bit of a kick in the gut, knowing that we should be hearing the Jays on our radio station right now. We should be airing opening day right now.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't know that this team was going to be good necessarily, and if you just measure wins and losses, but I damn well know they were going to be exciting. This was going to be a team to watch. This was not going to be a mundane, boring, low-scoring, grinded-out team. This was going to be okay, the defense is a little crazy. They can hit. Can they pitch? They do have a couple guys that you don't want to miss a start, and one would be Hyunjin Ryu, who's would be on the mound right now, but instead is not. He's still in Dunedin with a pregnant wife, and there is no opening day. And there was a lot of reasons for optimism. There was certainly a lot of reasons to think they could be considerably better than last year's ugly squad. And, that sucks. The first day of the year is always a fun one. There's 162, and there certainly is a lot of games that feel like there's very little significance, but there's also ones that feel way more important than they actually are because they represent things. And opening day is a return of, the pastime into that portion of the calendar. Okay, baseball's back, which kind of signals the beginning of summer in some places and maybe the beginning of spring in others. And, other ones would be like Canada Day when they wear the reds at home at the Rogers Center. But, this is a big day for baseball. This is a day that I would typically try to gather with pals and watch baseball and celebrate baseball being back. Not to say, game one, win or lose, this is going to be a real indicator on the year. But just to say, this is a sport that we love and it's been gonzo since early fall. We need it back. And today is that great hurrah that the sport is back, except that it's not back. And we're on the air and I'm not
really
watching
not
TV.
Back at all. Here's one of my favorite. Go ahead. Sorry.
The Major League MLB.com was airing on each team's homepage a huge game. So in honor of opening day and no baseball, MLB ran the bat flip game in its entirety, which was game 5 of the ALDS against the Texas Rangers in 2015. Mm-hmm. And I was busy this morning being a parent and had some video meetings and all kinds of nonsense. But by the time I'd gotten all that done and rushed up to the office, I got to watch Roberto Osuna close out that game. So it was the aftermath of that insane seventh inning where Russell Martin hits the bat of the Ranger player when he's trying to throw it back to the mound. A run comes in, the chaos that follows, fans throwing beer cans on the field, the incredibly poor fielding by Odor and the rest of that Rangers infield, and then the following blast that put the Jays ahead to stay. I missed all that, but I did get that incredible euphoric celebration of the win from the fans that survived that seventh and then were still there to watch this Jays team come back from an 0-2 hole to move on to the ALCS for the first time in 93. That was really cool. It would, I think I can get into this once a week going down memory lane on a good Blue Jays baseball team. I just don't know how many weeks we'd have of that. There's like 92, 93, 15, 16, and then what else have we got?
Yeah, it was there were a lot of, well, here's, I'll give you my opening day story. So I was a big Jays fan growing up, and I got hooked in by the early 90s teams. My first baseball memory was, I believe, Candy Maldonado calling for the fly ball in the final game of the 92 American League Championship Series, which clinched the pennant for the Jays, and they would move on to the World Series. And that was my first, like, real baseball memory, and fell in love with that 92 team. I had the cassette tape of all the stupid songs they made in Toronto, you know, like Terminator for Tom Hankey and the stupid Let's Go Blue Jays song, and the Mookie Wilson song. They had so many of these ridiculous songs that you listen to now and they're just cringeworthy. But so I fell in love with that team in 92, and I remember Joe Carter catching that ball at first base on Otis Nixon's bunt single, or almost bunt single, that almost kept the Braves in that game six, and the Jays won there. And then I was dialed in the next year as what a 9-year-old and not an 8-year-old in 1993. And I went to my first ever major league game in Toronto that summer, saw the Jays play against Cleveland at the Sky Dome at the time. And then, of course, they'd go on and win the second consecutive World Series in 93. But then, you know, the lean year started. So a few years down the road, I kind of fell away from baseball and wasn't as big into it until 1997. And I remember opening day vividly in 1997, opening day for the Toronto Blue Jays. Roger Clemens got the start, and I remember how fired up Skydome was. And you know, I'd been away from baseball for 2 or 3 years, 4 or 5 years actually, and you know, I hadn't been as dialed in. And then there's Clemens, like Roger Clemens, and I played Roger Clemens baseball for the Game Boy, and I loved that friggin' game. He was the only major leaguer in the game. The rest of them were all fake and based on real major leaguers. And I remember watching Clemens pitch his first game for the Jays, and he struck out his first at bat, and Skydome went nuts, and you know, it was sold out as it always is. And that was always the coolest thing about opening day during the lean years for the Blue Jays was that didn't matter how bad they were projected to be, didn't matter who was on the team. Like, there were those years with Vernon Wells and John McDonald, and you're just like, oh my goodness, like, these are some really bad teams. And didn't matter, opening day at the Sky Dome or Rogers Center, when it was eventually named that, always jammed, always loud. And then for a couple of years, you got that on a game-by-game basis, on a daily basis at Rogers Center. So, yeah, I'm a little bummed that we're not watching opening day right now. I'm a little bummed that we're not hearing it. And, you know, it has less to do about us getting the day off and more to do. I love late March, early April baseball. I love the fact that it's back. So I'm a little choked that it's not back. I think that we would be in the majority. And I have no idea what baseball is going to look like or when the first pitch for real is going to be thrown. I have no feel on when baseball is going to be back.
How could you? Yeah, I mean, when's anything going to look normal again? And will we have normal again, or will we have what's a new normal where society operates a little differently? I mean, we it's all guesswork, and we're certainly not I guess qualified to be doing the guesswork. We're just a bunch of guys that fill airways talking about sports, but now talking about not having sports on day 15 of the sports apocalypse. So I don't know, I was excited to see Hyunjin Ryu pitch, which would have been cool. This was the biggest free agent splash that Shapiro and Atkins have had in their tenure, and I think it signaled a shift from the rebuild being complete to the building up around a good young core. They showed the Vlad Major League Baseball debut earlier this week on Sportsnet, I want to say. Maybe it was on the weekend, where it aired a couple different days. And it was against Oakland at Rogers Center. And some of the dusters on that roster for the Blue Jays, you're like, oh my gosh, like, this is before Biggio, this is before Bichette. Vlad just pushed Drury to like second base. The Drury doesn't even crack a squeeze. He's a bench player on this year's team. I mean, there's so many guys you're like, oh, these guys are brutal. And not to suggest that this year's group should be planning a parade route, or, you know, cancel those orders for the floats to go down, you know, Blue Jay Way. But, you know, this is clearly a very different off season and a very different feel being in spring from a year ago, where last year still felt like part tearing it down and handing over the reins to the kids. And this year was about insulating that young core with veterans. And I Ryu especially, because he, you know, best ERA in the National League last year. That's incredible. A guy that has just been a master of his craft for so many years and has done it in the shadow of maybe the best pitcher of our lifetime in Clayton Kershaw. Like, it's, I was really excited to see him go.
We are underway on Pinder and Steinberg. Happy Thursday. Welcome to the program. Logan Gordon holding down the fort at our Sportsnet 960 Basement Systems downtown studio. Pinder's at Shea Pinder. I'm here at Shea Steinberg. Hopefully your Thursday is going along well. Peter Labardi is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. 2:30, Lubo is going to join us. We'll catch up with Lou. Haven't spoken to him in exactly 2 weeks, so we'll check in with Lou. How about this? Do you want to – here's something that might make your blood boil. In the midst of the president of the United States saying that, oh, no, America will be back open for business by Easter. This is a very realistic time frame. And then anybody who knows anything saying, no, this is not a realistic time frame. In the midst of that, UFC president Dana White has been extremely defiant as well. I continue to scratch my head as to what exactly the defiant people are trying to defy. I don't know who they're trying to impress or what they're trying to prove. All they're doing is endangering themselves and, more importantly, endangering people who are at a far higher risk than they are. And it remains infuriating, all of these Corona tough guys and Corona tough girls who are like Evangeline Lilly. I would like... give up your Canadian citizenship. I would like to personally take that from you. But here's Dana White, who is defiant and adamant that come April 18th, UFC 249 will take place. Here, every sports league, the KHL even begrudgingly had to cancel their season. They were still holding empty arena games up until about a week ago. The KHL is canceled. Aussie Rules football is canceled. Golf wanted to keep going. They've been postponed. Every sports league isn't running events. Doesn't matter if there are people in the building or not. But Dana White says, no. We can do UFC 249. Don't you worry. We'll do it. In fact, I pulled this. This is from the Spinning Backfist account and the one of the podcasts that they do at Barstool Sports. Listen to Dana White on with Barstool, very defiant about UFC 249 happening right in the face of a global pandemic.
I'm not telling
Do you have the location? Is it set?
I'm not telling the media anything. I'm not telling them anything, okay? Because every day when I wake up, there's a bullshit story, or somebody doesn't like this, or somebody doesn't like that. I don't give a f- what you think, what you like or don't like. On April 18th, you either want to turn on the TV and watch this fight, or you don't. You don't even have to f-ing show up, because there's not going to be any fans there. You don't have to come cover it. You either want to watch it or you don't.
There's the president of the UFC, Mr. Pinder, defiant that doesn't matter what you think. I don't care what these medical experts say. I don't care what everyone else is doing and what every medical professional is saying. We're still going to hold UFC 249. I don't care. These are the things that make my head hurt and make my optimism level get kicked in the teeth every time it starts to go up a little bit.
Yeah, he's boys with Trump. Those two are two peas in a pod there. I guess Dana had called him and got assurance from the president that things would be okay for prior events that have since been canceled. I don't know. I mean, like, if that's what you want to do, you want to go out there and side against the people that study these things and the scientists and the people in the medical fields that know more than you do about this. Like, if Dana White's telling a doctor in an ER about, you know, a certain hold or submissive tactic in, you know, mixed martial arts, I feel like the doctor's going to be like, yeah, that's your area of expertise, Dana. That's great. Like, I absolutely believe you. I take your word on it. But the inverse doesn't seem to be true, which, that's funny. I don't know that Mr. White has a background or a very storied education with epidemiology, which is a big word that I'm trying to use as much as I can now in isolation.
Epidemiology. Nice job.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, whatever. There's been a lot of people that have, like, Trump was the one that said, yeah, we got 15 cases. We'll be down to zero in no time. That's
meanwhile, they are, they're just on pace to be the nation hardest hit. You know, China, 5 times more population, yet the United States is going to far surpass them, it looks like, in terms of both overall cases and overall deaths. And yes, this is the country that we want to be getting our medical advice from. It just, it's frustrating because as much as I want live sports back, nobody wants live sports back more than you or me or Logues or our group of people listening. It's just like, let's all just for a little bit realize that every corporation is going to take a massive financial hit. All individually, we're going to take some sort of financial hit, whether it be from an income standpoint. I feel awful for the people who have lost their jobs. 7,000 WestJet employees had to go on leave, whether it be permanent or temporary. There's a company based in our city that had to lay off half of their workforce, or at the very least pause Jeez. Employment for half their workforce. You know, I have no idea what's going to happen with Rogers. I have no idea what we're going to do and how long we're going to be able to sustain in the radio business. Hell, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm worried about how an all sports radio station survives with no sports in the long term. Like these things are affecting every one of us. We don't need people to make it worse, and we don't need things to make it so this doesn't get better. And that's exactly what defying this and you know, flipping the middle finger to all of these all these social policies does. So it's frustrating. I want live sports as much as you do. It's just, I'm willing to wait for it. I'm willing to sacrifice because we all got to make sacrifice. This is kicking all of us in the teeth. And, you know, you've got investments, right? I hope you haven't looked at them because they're probably straight in the toilet the same way mine are. Like, hey, we're all taking massive financial hits here.
You know, I'll say this. Like, I haven't been following the Dana White thing closely, except to know that, you know, he's been very, as you've used the word, defiant. That's accurate. Could they pull off a bunch of fights without, you know, placing people in danger of spreading? Like, if you tested everyone, quarantined them coming into the match, worked with small teams, like, is that feasible at all, or is this a guy that's just that is just trying to unroll the middle finger to science and the medical community?
What is the CDC's recommendation south the border? Is it gatherings less than 50 people?
Yeah.
So I believe it's still less than 50 people. And that's going on for like the better part of 6 months or whatever they said it was going to be. Or 8 weeks. 8 weeks is what they said. So 2 months. So if the CDC is saying don't have gatherings of 50 people or more, and a UFC fight has, say, and he said it's going to be a full card, so say there's 15 fights, well, there's 30 people plus judges.
Yeah, but they don't have to be in the same room at the same time. I mean, I'm going to give them a very, very small and unworthy benefit of the doubt. You could section off a huge building and use numerous rooms. Like, I imagine the Saddle Dome. Give one team one dressing right. room, give another team a different dressing room, and you've got rooms scattered around. And then, okay, you've got camera people and producers, and you need judges. Like, is it feasible? Or are we maybe not giving him credit? Because if you could do it safely, he knows he's got the sports world all to himself. That's I see the dollar figures in his eyes if he thinks he can get it done without violating any sort of rules about gathering people. But it also probably doesn't send a good message.
That's the thing that, like, could they? Probably. Like, could they technically get around regulations and technically do it so they stay under 50 people and technically quarantine? Yeah, maybe. But the problem is, it's more about the message. It's more about, like, what message are you? You've got governments, governors, premiers, prime ministers across the world saying, stay the bleep home. Like, this is the our premier said it yesterday. People aren't getting it. Now we're going to start enforcing that you have to self-quarantine. And if you're told that you have to socially isolate, you have to. And if we say that you can't have a gathering of 50 or more people, 50 or less people, then we're going to enforce that because people aren't getting it. And our prime minister has said time and time again, like, just stay home. The message is simple. I don't understand why there continues to be this, well, it doesn't apply to me. And so it's more about the message than anything else. Like, well, yeah, stay home, but we don't have to. We're going to hold our fights. And you know what? These don't apply to us, so why do they have to apply to you? That's what bothers me. I don't think it's a good precedent to set. I really don't.
Yeah, no, it certainly isn't that. Okay, well, what else have we got on tap today? I'm looking. We got some pretty good guests today. I'll give the group out in Toronto a ton of credit on Hockey Central. They have been bringing in top-end executive after top-flight NHL coach. I mean, it's almost like a look at the Hall of Fame in 20 years. The guests they've been rolling out this week, and they already had some Hall of Fame members join them, including the great one a couple days ago. We're pretty good. I mean, I don't know that I expected day 15 without sports for the shows to be as flush as they've been, but we've had some fun, and we've actually gotten some really good chats with some fascinating people, and there's more on tap. Colin Patterson of the 89 Flames, who is an absolute legend, is going to join us tomorrow afternoon, and we're still chasing down Mike Soroka, who's going to join us from Florida when the timing works. He's shut down as the rest of spring training is. He, of course, looking for an incredible follow-up season to getting Cy Young votes last year with the Braves.
Let's get to the text line. A few texts, 960-960. I'll read all of them that we've got to this point. This from Luke. Dana White can just intimidate the virus. No big deal. Yeah, if he swears at the virus enough, that'll keep it away. This reads, the WWE continues to put on shows. I am aware of that. And I did see that.
Yeah.
They continue to say we're going forward with WrestleMania.
And then I looked at it, and I'm like, this is not a replay. This is in a staged theater area, and the smoke and lights are a lot closer to the ring, so you don't see empty seats. And it was like very eerie to hear no crowd effect and only the announcers and like the smack of the mat when guys get tossed. I was like, well, this is weird. I'm not much of a wrestling guy, but I definitely watched for a couple minutes because it was just so weird to see it without, you know, that's a sport that the ambiance and the interaction with fans, that just it's like the sport is dripping in that, and you removed all that. It was weird.
Well, same when watching those AFL games from Australia over the weekend. It was like that sport is based on crowds being loud and engaged, and now all you're hearing is the smacking of 220-pound bodies going up against one another and grunting and then a bunch of Aussie accents. That's all you heard. It was really strange. I'll start a GoFundMe to keep you on the air, boys. I appreciate you guys every day. Trust me. Thank you. I think we'll be okay.
We might need that. We don't know.
Pat, I'd forgotten what a good horror movie Nightmare on Elm Street is. 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. 3, 4, better lock your door. 5, 6, grab your crucifix. 7, 8, better stay up late. 9, 10, never sleep again. Yeah, that movie's terrifying.
Seriously.
Wedley says that I need to tell my roofer girl date at some point. I've told that like 6 different times, but hey, if we run out of content,
I will.
If we get
to next week, let's do it.
And then finally, we were talking baseball. Guys, a quick baseball story. I got hooked on baseball by listening to Jerry Howarth in Saskatchewan visiting relatives in the late 90s and early 2000s. Have lots of good memories of different home run calls, miss baseball, and Jerry Howarth on the radio. No doubt.
There she goes.
One of the best voices of all time.
In the bullpen.
Okay, a couple of news items for you. Number one, Pinder has gotten us up to date on last night's Flames-Ducks game. Ooh, on his NHL 94 extremely realistic simulation. I downloaded NHL 20 a couple nights ago. It was on for great sale. Got it for $29.99. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm terrible at it. The first night I played it was not last night, but the night before. I skipped last night because the first night I was so angry at the game. It's so hard, and I really was frustrated. Like, I randomized. I was like, okay, I'll be Vegas and Ottawa. Sweet, I should be able to win this game. They beat me like 18-1. It was really bad.
What?
So I got some work to do. But I did start simulating games, and I've got the first two games the Flames have missed all good to go.
Ooh,
and we'll continue to do that as well. So we'll do that a little bit later on the show.
You've got 8 games. You're behind. So you're playing catch up. And I can tell you the Flames, their game against the Ducks took care of business, 6-2. Al MacInnis, man, he's turned the corner. 3 assists, couple for Fleury. And, you know, Robert Reichel's chipping in. Flames are going good. Now, the Ducks absolutely suck. They're brutal, like awful. Guy Hebert was in net. You could have used a shooter tutor and done better. Like Anatoly Semenov and Terry Yake, like there's some bad, bad players on that team. It is no good at all.
Well, so the Flames are on a heater right now on NHL 94. They might not lose between now and the end of the regular season. We'll see how things are going on NHL 20 a little bit later on. But up next, Peter Labardius joins us. We'll catch up with Lou around the corner. Lots to talk about with the gentleman himself. Peter Labardius joins us next.